introduction. So I'm going to tell about this work that we recently published on Physical Review A, like this month. So most of this talk will be based on the results of this paper. But to reach to the point that I actually introduced the results of this paper, I will mention some of the main criteria to define when a quantum system can thermalize or not. Okay, so here a brief introduction, a brief outline of this talk. I will start with some general aspects of the localization in the absence of interactions, which you know is related to the Anderson localization, and then introducing the effects of the interactions and how this generalized to the many-body localization thing. And then we're going to introduce this paper that was recently published on Science that mostly it's a way to experimentally see the results that we were studying numerically. And then before I head on to the results of this paper, I will comment on the thermalization and the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. And later on, talk a bit more about the results of this paper and with some further results of MBL itself. So as an introduction, let me revise a bit of the criteria of the Anderson localization. We see that if we have, for instance, suppose a crystal where you have some energy levels, which are on-site energy levels, which are chosen in a box distribution of a disorder, they're randomly chosen, you can see that the block states that are initially extend, they become like localized, defining a localization length. And then you see that not only the ground state, but the highly excited energy states, they're localized as well. And then this picture is originated by the enhanced backscattering, which is related to the quantum interference that is fully understood in the limit of one and two dimensions. And for three dimensions, you can see that there are some localized and some extended states. While in one and two dimensions, every single amount of disorder you put on these on-site energy levels introduce localization in highly excited states. And there are some experimental realizations of this phenomenon, which can be seen here, like in this experiment of an aspects group, where they have like a tightly confined Bose-Einstein condensate of code atoms, in this case, bosonic atoms here, that they are initially in time equals zero, they're tightly confined. They form this highly, this density is peaked in the middle of the lattice. And then basically later they release this confinement, but along this direction here, there is some disorder, okay, which is characteristic of that, has the same more or less profile of this random disorder. And you see that this macroscopic occupation of the zero momentum state has some tails, some exponential tails, which is related to the fact that the wave functions has an envelope which is also exponentially localized. So this is a realization of the Anderson localization in occult atom experiments. Also, you can see this with photonic lattices. In the limit of the paraxial limit of the Maxwell equations, you can see that this is like a propagation of light in this photonic crystal here, where the light induced in this crystal makes some disorder in the refraction index in each one of the planes of propagating along this z direction here. And then you see that in the limit of low disorder or no disorder, the light propagates. And then when a disorder is large, you see that the localization in this central region. So there is no propagation in the lateral direction. So the idea is that the z dimension here is related to the time dependence in the Schrodinger equation. So it's something that is related also to the Anderson localization. And then there is also another aspect, which is a variant of the Anderson localization, which is called the Aubrey-Ander model, that instead of having completely random energy levels for this this tightly bounded system, you have some correlated disorder in the sense that they have it's made of out of a cosine here with a phase which is arbitrary. And in this case, you can perform a transformation in your system where you have a limit where for a critical value of this this number here, delta, that classifies the disorder, you have delocalization below this value, and above it, localization. And this is valid for all the states, all the single particle states. So all the single particle states are localized above this value of delta C, and then below it is they're delocalized. And an experimental realization of this model of the non-interacting particles could be seen also in optical lattices experiments, where they have two lasers that by changing the ratio, the wavelength of this, these two lasers, they could model this Aubry-André model here, and then this is more or less the lattice, and has like the minima, which agrees with this picture here of the Aubry-André model. And you see here, initially, you have a localized state that after some time for a large disorder, it keeps localized over time. But if you have small values of disorder, this spreads out of this over the system. And this is everything for the non-interacting limit, where you don't introduce Feshbach resonances, and you see that the values of the interactions in this limit of low densities is pretty low in comparison to the tunneling among nearby sites on the lattice. So this is all new, we know everything about it. And then now I'm going to introduce the aspects when we have interactions, what does it happen there? And this is related to some theoretical studies by Basco, Alainer, and now Schuller, that they show that the introduction of electron-electron interactions by using perturbation theory, you can see that this, which was in the beginning a completely localized system for high enough temperatures, this leads to the phase which completely destroys this localization that it had in the non-interacting limit. And then what happens is that for large enough temperatures, then the system basically thermalizes, it's no longer localized and under its own influence. So you don't need to have a couple to an external bath in order to see this process of thermalization. So the question now is the following. If we keep increasing this order, do we recover the picture of a localized system? So this is related to the many-body localization question. And then recently, the Emanuel's Bloch group, they published a paper where they have an emulation of the Hubbard model in linear chains with this quasi-periodic disorder in the limit of the Aubry-André model. So basically, this is the type of disorder they have. So they simulate something similar to this, but now with two components spins in the sense that you have like two atoms, one atom with two hyperfine states. And then initially, you have a way to prepare the system where most of your atoms are occupying even sites on your lattice, okay? And then you release this constraint and see how this charging balance, how this charge density wave that you initially prepared propagates as a function of time. Does it preserve a memory of the initial state of this charge density wave, or becomes completely spread out and you lose completely the information that it had in the beginning about the state? So they have a similar model that atoms, they hop among consecutive adjacent neighbors in this lattice, and then whenever they occupy a given minimum of this potential, they interact with which causes an increase of energy U, and this is given by Feshbach resonances. And then the picture here is like the phase diagram that they introduce is the following. You have here the increase of the interactions, and here the increase of this disorder strength. Okay, and then you see that for low enough disorder values, the system delocalizes, which means that it completely loses the information about the initial charge density wave that it had in the beginning. And for large enough disorder, you see there is some partial information preserved in the long time limit. Okay, and then the idea is how to quantify this with the interaction. How can we predict the exact format of this curve here? And then we know that the non-interacting limit, it was delta C equals to 1. In his definition of the Aubry-André, he doesn't have like a factor of 1.5, so it's 2 here. And then in the strong interaction limit, this Hubbard model is equivalent to spinless fermions non-interacting speakless firm, and so we recovered the non-interacting limit here. So what is in between here? Is this a shape? This the shape of this curve here is general. So we're gonna understand this problem by doing numerical simulations. But before that, you want to understand that in this part here, the system is called ergodic. It thermalizes, right? And then here in this part is non-ergodic. So before understanding how the system becomes non-ergodic, it's better that we understand how this ergodicity takes place. So we're gonna see now how thermalization hypothesis goes on in quantum mechanical systems. So first, let's remind a bit of classical systems. Okay, so suppose you have some sort of like an ideal gas that is prepared to be in a it's constrained in a small portion of the volume of this box here, that suddenly you release this constraint and you see that by a nonlinear chaotic evolution of these particles, you cannot, after a long time, you no longer can predict whether this gas here was constrained in a small portion of this volume. So you say that the observables here could be like the total pressure of the system. It equilibrates and more thermalizes. And seeing in the phase space analogy of this evolution here, you see that initially you have your classical system constrained in a point, in a given region, small region of this phase space, that after some time evolution here, your system now spans this whole phase space. Okay, so no memory of this initial state is preserved. In the quantum system, the time evolution is unitary, right? So suppose you prepare your system in a given state, it could be generalized to mixed states, but now I'm gonna restrict to pure ones, but this is like a general picture, that if in a given instant of time t, the time evolution of the system is given by this operation here, the exponential of the Hamiltonian applied to the initial state, which writing down the Hamiltonian in terms of its eigenstates, we can see that after an instant of time t, this wave function depends in the initial conditions, right? This coefficient C alpha, they're related to the initial state. So no information about the initial state is lost. So if you do the same now, considering an operator like an observable, you will see that the initial conditions are preserved here by means of this coefficient C alpha and C beta, okay? And then the idea is the following: how does this this observable here thermalize? How does it reach a thermal value? Okay. So in principle, you could separate this sum here in diagonal and non-diagonal terms, and then you can see that this which is given by the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, these non-diagonal terms here, despite they have an exponential large number of terms, they could the hypothesis says that these non-diagonal terms could be, they go to zero in the thermodynamic limit, while the diagonal terms, which have a contribution from the initial state that you have in the system, are the ones that wins this race here in the long time limit. And then the diagonal ensemble prediction gives you the value of the stationary limit of this Hamiltonian, and it's equal to the thermal prediction, right? So the diagonal ensemble gives you the thermal prediction for this quantum isolated system, okay? And then this is basically related to the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis that was predicted to be the case by these papers by Dodge and Schrenick, okay? So now I'm gonna talk about a bit of ergodicity and random matrices, that we see that in this case, the system thermalizes, but how does this relate to the case of classical chaos? How do you quantify quantum chaos, right? And then for that, I will remind you guys of some basic knowledge of random matrix theory that was introduced by Wigner, this partial knowledge, that he was studying the excitation spectra of heavy nuclei. And you see that it was like a highly complicated problem, okay, where to actually know and discover what was the reason for this completely random energy levels was very complicated. So instead of dealing with this extremely complicated problem, he tried to understand how these eigenvalues are related to a problem that is completely random. Okay, so the idea is the following. So if you take your Hamiltonian in this system and write in a non-fine-tuned basis, that is, for instance, any basis that is known, it's not the, its eigenstate basis, the matrix will look completely random, okay? So instead of analyzing each one of the eigenvalues of this Hamiltonian, he tried to analyze the spacing between these eigenvalues. And he was seeing that this spacing follows some distribution, which is really characteristic. So, but to prove that there was a function that would predict what is the spacing between these eigenvalues, he analyzed first a random matrix of that is 2x2, just four elements, which elements are chosen from a Gaussian distribution with a variance equals to one. And then just for 2x2 matrices, random matrices, he could predict that the level spacing of this Hamiltonian or of this matrix by itself follows this rule here, okay? And then the idea is the following. Is this the case in a much more complicated random matrix, which is exponentially large in the number of degrees of freedom that I have in your system? And then that was the case. And then this is here, this function here of the level spacings, the distribution of the level spacings for this half nuclei. And you see that there is a nice match between the experimental results, which are given by this histogram here, and the function that he obtained for 2x2 matrices, okay? And then the question is the following. How can we match now this knowledge about random matrices that is purely an insight of chaotic systems with classical chaos, okay? So the idea is the following. Suppose you have this billiard here with a very funny shape, okay? You know that this system classically, you may not, it's understandable that this system, if you allow one particle to have an initial velocity here, it will eventually, in the limit of that time goes to infinity, it will span this whole area of this billiard homogeneously. So it is a chaotic system in a classical sense. But suppose now that we have a quantum system, just one particle subject to these constraints given by these walls here. These are infinite walls. If you calculate the distribution of level spaces in this case, this quantum mechanical system at high energies, you would see that it follows the same distribution as it was the case for these random matrices. So now you have a connection of a system that has a classical counterpart with a system that doesn't have, and they follow the same distribution. So this this level fluctuation, this distribution of this level spacings, they are universal in chaotic system, and they define univocally what is a quantum chaotic system, okay? So in the end of the day, what we have is that if you have a quantum chaotic system obeying time reversal symmetry, the distribution of level spacings has this form here, where it's zero for zero spaces, meaning that you have some level repulsion. And then in the limit of completely uncorrelated levels, when you no longer have chaos playing a role in this system, you have a Poisson distribution of this level spacings. So this is something that you're gonna use in the actual problem of, yeah.
Is there a 2x2 matrix equivalent experiment for the Poisson distribution?
If they are completely uncorrelated, I guess so. I'm not totally sure. What I know is the following, is that if you do the same like experiment here with a box that is like that it has like a rectangular shape, for instance, this problem classically is non-chaotic. Okay, so you would have a distribution that looks like Poisson, So that hints you that in the quantum mechanical limit, at high energies at least, if you follow the same distribution, you might have chaos as well. So that's a way to come from a classical result where you have chaos, and then you come to the quantum system analyzing completely different aspect about level spacings and having the same distribution is an indicative whether you have chaos or not. Okay? So this is a defining property. That's my takeout message here, that analyzing level spacings defines whether you have an ergodic quantum system or a non-ergodic one. Okay? But the question, random matrix theory is more powerful than just analyzing the level spacings. It also mentions stuff about the eigenvectors, that they basically, in this random matrix theory, they are completely, they are unit random vectors, which are completely uncorrelated to other eigenvectors of this random matrix, okay? But if you take, for instance, a Hamiltonian in, I don't know, like a Fock basis, in this like Hubbard model, you see that this Hamiltonian is it's not random at all. It's sparse, but its elements are far from being random, right? So the question is the following. In the case that this Hamiltonian is not random, does it still follow the random matrix prediction? Okay. So for that, we're gonna analyze the information entropy, which is basically a measure of the delocalization in a given basis that you write your Hamiltonian. Okay, if the matrix is completely random, this information entropy here has a value that is proportional to the dimensionality of this matrix and is given by this number here. Okay, and then let's see an example of a quantum many-body system. In this case, interacting spinless fermions in 1D, where you have hoppings from first neighbors and second neighbors, and you have interactions of first neighbors and second neighbors as well. If you take the limit of this second neighbor hopping and then the second neighbor interaction equals to zero, this problem is integrable, okay? So that would tell you that the level spacing distribution of this system would follow a Poisson distribution, okay? But in the case that they are finite, the system is non-integrable. And if you write down the information entropy normalized by the GOE prediction, the random matrix prediction, you see that as you go away from the integrability, the energy for some energy levels, for some eigenstates, you keep reaching this value 1, which means that the eigenstates of a non-completely random matrix follow in the middle of the band the prediction of random matrices. Okay, so that's the story. And finally, another aspect of classical systems is the following. We know that if you take two initial conditions, after some time, the trajectories in phase space, in this case here in real space, are completely random, are completely uncorrelated after a given amount of time, right? Does that have some analogous in the quantum limit? And the idea is the following. Suppose you have a known that previous Hamiltonian that I showed in written with the information entropy, which is a characteristic information about the delocalization of that eigenstates in this basis. And if you write down this information entropy as a function of a variation of the parameters here of the Hamiltonian, you see that if you change just a bit these parameters, the information entropy rises as a function of the system size, meaning that the new Hamiltonian written in terms of this former one is completely random. The eigenstates are completely delocalized and random. So that's the equivalent of this classical scenario, okay? So, and now, I'm gonna go to the results of this paper. And then first, it's a motivation about why do we study the Hubbard model, okay? First of all, because many aspects of the many-body localization problem have been studied with models that are either spin models, okay, or models that are related to it by a Jordan-Wigner transformation, like in interacting spinless fermions, okay? So this is pretty much known for a couple of years. And then if you do some on-site disorder here that follows a flat distribution like in the Anderson model, this critical value of this field here, in this case of the spins, it's around 3.5, either for a flat distribution or for a bimodal distribution of energy levels, okay, of this random field. And then now we studied the Hubbard model because this was studied already, and then also we also want to compare with the results from that paper that I showed, the experimental paper of Emmanuel's Bloch group, okay, and see whether we can see their prediction of a lack of thermalization for large enough values of disorder, okay. And for that, we use brute forces actinization. You cannot go away from trying to reduce the Hilbert space of the system using symmetries, because in this case, for instance, disorder breaks translation invariance, translation symmetry, and then you have a brute force problem. Okay, but first, let me introduce here the Hubbard Hamiltonian, which is classified by can be characterized by a first term, which is basically the hopping term, and a second term, which is the interaction term here between fermions occupying the same site. And then we know that this problem in 1D, which is the dimensionality we're going to analyze in this system, in this problem, it's integrable by a Bethe-Ansatz solution. So that means that this problem would not, this model would not thermalize, okay? But we don't want to see that. We want to see whether we have thermalization and its breakdown after inserting disorder, okay? So how can we do that? Well, if we insert a next nearest neighbor hopping, this is no longer integrable. So in principle, this system would thermalize, okay? And but there is always a but in this case, is that if you see this Hamiltonian has SU2 symmetry, so it means that this problem is not completely random. You do have some degeneracies in your spectrum, and you want to get rid of them. And not only that, if you have open boundary conditions in this one dimensional chain here, you have also inversion symmetry for low values of disorder, okay, or in the limit that disorder goes to zero. So you want to also break this inversion symmetry, okay? And then for that, you introduce two extra terms, which we expect that will not affect the results of the transition from a complete ergodic system to a non-ergodic one. And then they break both SU2 symmetry and inversion symmetry. You basically have a Zeeman field in one extreme of the lattice and the chemical potential in the other extreme. Okay, and then we're going to analyze how this ergodicity is recovered after we introduce these fields here. Okay. So the idea is the following. To quantify the ergodicity, we analyze the ratio of adjacent gaps. There's a fraction here in between these two minimum and max. So basically, we take two adjacent gaps in the spectrum and take the ratio. And then if you write down the Wigner Dyson distribution of level spacings in terms of this quantity here, which is this ratio of adjacent gaps, you see that the mean value of this distribution in the GOE limit of random matrix is 0.53. And then in the case where you have you don't have an ergodic system, is given by a Poisson distribution, which is, with mean value equals to 0.39. So here we are analyzing this quantity, this ratio, as a function of those fields that we take them as to have like the same magnitude. And then you see that you come from a Poisson limit and a non-ergodic limit, and after increase these fields, they reach the Wigner-Dyson distribution. So we want to have the lowest amount of these fields that will give you thermalization, and later on introduce a disorder to see how this thermalization breaks down.
Do you have to prime in the?
Yeah. So I didn't show here, but most of these results I'm gonna put on the following are for T prime equals 0.5 units of T.
So you're saying that this is
No. What I'm saying is that if you don't have HB and mu B, these fictitious fields, the problem is ergodic because you have degeneracies, right? The degeneracy comes here without disorder, okay? So everything is without disorder. You see here that first you have inversion symmetry, okay? And then second, you have SU2 symmetry in the Hubbard Hamiltonian. So that does not show you that the spectrum is completely ergodic. in the terms of analyzing the level spacings.
But is there a sense of ergodicity once you fix these quantum numbers?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing. I'm going to answer your question. So if you do that, if you introduce these fields here, you see that you come from this Poisson distribution to a Wiener Dyson one. Okay, and then we want to see that what is the smallest values of this field that you recover thermalization in this sense, ergodicity, okay, and then do the analysis on top of this. Okay, so your question is?
Yeah, so my question was related to that one. So if you were like looking at given symmetry sectors, you would still find that you get a Poisson distribution in this.
Which symmetry sector specifically?
I mean, if you put your like HB and mu b to zero, mm-hmm. you have given symmetry sectors again. And if you would look at one given sector,
yeah, if you, yeah, but you have to, right. You, in principle, you recover the random matrix result. You recover ergodicity. Yes, you're right. This is a way that you can do this just, you know, by tuning a parameter in your system easily without introducing any. Because if you think of the following, you could break. Actually, this is something I didn't introduce here. But if you use parity, use the inversion symmetry, you recover the ergodic result, the 0.53, okay? But if you introduce disorder, you don't have inversion symmetry. So you wanna, since we're interested in the breakdown of thermalization for very small values of U, and then nearby these small values of U, we expect to have very small values of disorder that would break this ergodicity, since it has to match the Anderson result, you want to have like a controllable thing that you can, you know, basically tune and see thermal ergodicity playing a role there, okay? So the idea is the following. And notice, I'm sorry for coming back and forth here, that these fields, these fictitious fields here, they do not scale with the size of the system, okay? So you expect their role in the thermodynamic limit to be very small, okay? So, and then you can see here, forget about these blue and red curves here for small system sizes, but you can see that for the larger system sizes, the green curve is allocated to 10 sites, and 12 sites in the purple curve. And you see that the smallest value of the field that gives you the ergodic result decreases. So you expect this to be basically zero in the thermodynamic limit. Okay, any finite fictitious fields will break the symmetry and you're good. And recover ergodicity, okay? And then here, I was just comparing two values of U, but and this T prime dimension is here, 0.5, okay? So now, if we introduce disorder, what does it happen? Okay, how do we see ergodicity failure here? So this has become non-ergodic. So here, I'm plotting the distribution of this quantity of the adjacent gaps, and you see that like the blue curve here is for very small values of disorder, and it follows the GOE prediction, okay? And then after increased disorder, you recover the Poisson limit, which is given by this black curve here, okay? And then you see this is valid for a value of T prime equals to 0.5 or a value of T prime equals to 1, okay? And we want to see exactly how does this this evolution from an ergodic limit to a non-ergodic one is affected by the values of U. How can we draw a phase diagram of this thing here? Okay, similar to what was done by the experiment of Emmanuel's Bloch group. Okay, so here's the idea. We do this adjacent gap analysis as a function of the disorder, okay, for two different values, two lattice sizes, and you see that as we increase disorder, this lattice, this prediction match or somehow converge to a given value, which gives us, by scaling theory, what would be the critical value of disorder that you still have ergodicity, and above that, you recover the non-ergodic limit, which is related to the many-body localized phase. Okay, so you see here in as I go down here in these panels, I'm increased the interaction. Okay, so you see that initially I have a substantial amount of disorder that I need to put in the system to break ergodicity, which is for U equals to 0.2 is W equals to 8, which is extremely large. And then as I increase interactions, this critical disorder increases as well, and later on it decreases. Okay, so if I do phase diagram of this evolution here of this these crossings, I can see that in the limit that u goes to zero, I converge more or less to the Anderson limit, which is any finite disorder I break ergodicity. Okay, I induce localization. And then in the limit of u goes to infinity, I recover the spinless, non-interacting spinless Fermi's results, which goes, as u goes to infinity, goes to zero as well. Okay, but this green curve here is for the distribution of disorder, which is completely random, right? The Anderson model. And you see that it's the ergodicity extremely robust after you put interactions, okay? Which is has to be compared with the result by this experiment, where they use a correlated disorder given by this Aubrey-Andre model here, and you see that the critical disorder that keeps the system ergodic and terminalizing, it's way smaller, okay? So now you can try to understand how does this depend on the occupation of your lattice. All these results here were given for a quarter filling. Oh, sorry for that. Quarter filling, okay. And if you increase a bit the filling, if you go to half filling, for instance, you see that the analysis of these crossings of these adjacent gaps, this is for half filling, this right columns here, the left column is for quarter filling. And you see that the crossing, the critical value of disorder that gives you the onset of many better localized phase increases slightly. So you can think of as in a half-filled system, as the interaction U playing a more of an effective role in helping the system thermalize. So you need more disorder to break down thermalization there, okay? So now let's do something very similar to what they have done in the experiment. Let's prepare an initial state where you have a modulation on the charges, okay? And see how this modulation in the charges evolves in these two phases that I have mentioned to you, the ergodic phase and the non-ergodic one, the many-body localized one. So I prepare some sort of like a variation of a Neel state, which is a quarter filling variation of a Neel state, and then see how this evolves with this disorder Hamiltonian, which is the Hubbard model with this on-site disorder term, okay? In the experiment, they saw that this initial imbalance that is given by this expression here, like the density in even sites minus the density in odd sites divided by the sum of them, is initially close to one. And after the time evolution with this Hamiltonian, if you don't have any amount of disorder, this imbalance goes to zero, meaning that you lose completely the initial information that of the initial state. And if you have finite values of disorder, in this case here, it should be delta equals to 2, the critical value for u equals to 0, you preserve some of the initial imbalance, some of the charge density wave information is still there, okay? And then we want to do the same numerically to probe their results. So I calculate here the same quantity, the charge imbalance, and you see here that for a zero amount of disorder, the initial imbalance that is equal to 1, I have all my even sites occupied. So this formula here gives something close to one. You see that it closely, after your time evolution of this Hamiltonian, this imbalance is lost. So you have a spread out of your charge. But for finite values of disorder, it goes finite in the limit that tau goes, that time goes to infinity. And then one of the important results here is that for u equals 4, by this phase diagram here, we have the critical value of disorder more or less equals to 20, okay? And then you see that in this specific case that I have a time evolution with a disorder strength that is close by this transition, the time scales that you see equilibration taking place is much larger than in other parts of this time of this phase diagram where I have different amount of disorders, okay? So that might be a problem for experiments, that when you're approaching the many-body localized transition, the time scales that this quantity reaches the long time limit is pretty large, okay? So here it's another paper, which is some sort of like continuation, the previous paper by Manuel's group, they analyze the same, but here they put some time scales where you see things no longer working for them. Like if you reach close by a region in time that is close to what we have analyzed here, they see that they start losing atoms in your system, and you no longer can probe whether you have reached an equilibrated value for the imbalance, and that will prohibit them to make a definitive statement about whether you preserve the initial charge imbalance, and then to probe the main body localized phase. So this is like extremely important. So now that we have analyzed how this time evolution is affected by the amount of disorder we put on the system, let's probe down here some aspects of this ETH breakdown. So as I mentioned before,
how much time do I have left?
Oh, we have 45 minutes, right? So it's 1 hour? Yeah, okay. So we see here, this is exactly the ETH prediction. And then we want to see whether this keeps valid as we increase disorder, okay? So this is the diagonal ensemble prediction of this observable wall, which in this case here, we try to analyze the destructive factor. Oops, I didn't put this slide, but this is the destructive factor, and this is the kinetic energy of in the of the Hubbard model. And we see that the diagonal ensemble prediction, this is a difference of the diagonal ensemble prediction and the microcanonical ensemble prediction normalized by the microcanonical ensemble prediction. And you see that before the critical disorder, as we increase system size from this green curve to the purple curve, this difference here decreases. Okay? And above the transition, the opposite is valid. So it means that here, you see ETH-like phase taking place, and here is a breakdown of the ETH. The difference between these two ensembles is finite and grows with the system size, so showing that in the many-body localized regime, you lose your ETH. ETH is broken down, basically. Okay. So another way of characterizing the many-body localized phase is by analyzing the long time limit, the stationary limit of the imbalance, right? And then you see that their claim in that paper is that this quantity here in the thermodynamic limit would play a role as an order parameter, okay, which would be only finite for a critical amount of disorder, okay? But for finite lattices, you see that this is quite far from it, that for even some relatively small amount of disorders, you have a finite imbalance that only being different from different system sizes after we reach the many-body localized phase. Okay, so you see the same picture here. As we increase system size, the imbalance decreases, and you expect that in the thermodynamic limit, we will recover some thing that would be close to this scenario here. And lastly, I would like to highlight the diagonal ensemble prediction of the kinetic energy. So in the many-body localized phase, we know also that we have a lack of mass transport in our system. And despite the fact that the kinetic energy does not probe transport directly in your system, you see that this long-time behavior prediction of this hopping term, it goes to zero after you reach the many-body localized phase. So this is another important aspect of the system. So, oops, something went wrong here. So let me put here, what is the ETH ansatz given by Schrenek? So you see that basically the eigenstate expectation values of a given operator O, they depend on the microcanonical prediction for diagonal matrix elements. And then a non-diagonal contribution here that goes to zero in the thermodynamic limit, which is proportional here to the exponential of minus of the entropy, which is extensive. So expect this whole term here to go to zero in the thermodynamic limit. And then a way to classify this is by analyzing this eigenstate expectation values as the function of energy. And they claim that these functions here, O and F, they are smooth functions of the energy of the system, which is for a given initial state would have a characteristic energy that would match the microcanonical prediction. And then if you analyze this quantity, you see that, for instance, this observable here that is smooth as a function of energy, this would mean that you have a thermal system, a system that thermalizes, and this opposite limit here that is spread out among different consecutive eigenstates, this means that the system is non-thermal, okay? So we analyze the same thing for the structure factor and the hopping of this Hubbard Hamiltonian, and then you see that, and also the imbalance, and then you see that for small amounts of disorder, you see a smooth variation of these eigenstate expectation values as a function of the energy of these eigenstates. And after increased disorder, they spread out. So it's another indication that thermalization is breaking down after you enter in the many body localized phase. Okay?
Do
they
get
sharper
as you increase system?
Yeah, that's. Yeah, that's exactly the thing. Here, I don't have different system sizes, just for the largest one, but you expect that in the thermodynamic limit, this would go to a smooth function, which is pretty sharp, and then for a given value here, would match the prediction for the microcanonical ensemble, the thermal value, okay? They do, that's a good point. And lastly, I would like to highlight some of the things about the eigenstates that we mentioned in the beginning, that the Shannon entropy that is equivalent to the information entropy that measures the delocalization of a given eigenstate in your basis. And here I'm gonna use the computational basis, which is basically the Fock basis of the system. And then you see that for a small amount of disorder, the middle of the band is pretty much the eigenstates, they are completely spread out in your basis, meaning that the predictions from random mix theory of non-ergodic systems is valid. But as increase disorder, you go to these other curves here, the green and the orange one, you see this is no longer the case, and you see the onset of localization taking place as well, okay? And a similar information is given by the inverse participation ratio, and the curves actually are pretty similar, but one is a linear scale, the other is a logarithmic one. But effectively, they give you the same information, okay? So you see that ergodicity plays a role here below the critical value of disorder, okay? And then you reach, the GOE prediction in the middle of the band. And then since I have a couple more minutes, let me just highlight some further aspects of many-body localization. That here in this talk, I try to make the claim that given that a system that thermalizes and it's ergodic, how does disorder breaks this ergodicity? But we didn't actually mention too much about what is the many body localized phase. And I wanna show some other results that are in the literature that can be a way to improve our results so far for the Hubbard model. And then there is this paper here recently published that analyzed the same breakdown of ergodicity, in this case for the Heisenberg model with a random field, okay? And they see that there is a mobility edge. So here's the energy density of your spectrum as a function of this disorder field here, which is given by this distribution. And you see that it states in the middle of this band, they to break down ergodicity, you need much more disorder than states nearby the edges of the spectrum, right? So this introduces a mobility edge that we didn't have enough system size to analyze here, and then they can reach some pretty large system sizes and do some predictions about even the scaling of this transition, of this many-body localized transition. So the idea is the following. For the system size that we are analyzing, you were diagonalizing matrix that were pretty large, already of the size of 65,000 states. And to reach the system sizes here that they do, they don't diagonalize the full matrix, so they do another technique where they diagonalize portions of the spectrum and they bin them in these different energy densities and see how each one of these energy densities have the prediction given by the adjacent gap analysis evolves. And you, in the end of the day, you recover this mobility edge here that we could not see, but that might be a way to improve our results. And finally, I want to highlight another interesting aspect, which is also given by a paper of Anderson, but is a different one from that original one from 1958, which is given by the orthogonality catastrophe. So suppose that you have a metallic system, okay? And then you're able to compute the ground state of this metallic system. And remember that there were like extended states, right? And then now you introduce a perturbation, a local perturbation, basically adding an impurity in this system. You can prove that the overlap of these two ground states decreases the power law of the system size. Okay, and this is called the orthogonality catastrophe. So how about localized systems? If you enter in a single particle localized case or even a many-body localized system. So there, in this case, there's these other papers that claim there is a statistical orthogonality catastrophe where this overlap of these two ground states is the explanation in system size, okay? So can these two different behaviors of this fidelity, this overlap, be another indicator of whether you're entering in a many-body localized phase for the ground state? So there is no much consensus in the literature about whether you have all the states entering in some sort of like a many-body localized phase because you need to have a finite energy density. But this may be a tool to probe that, okay? So here they plot exactly this scaling here. So in the non-interacting limit, it's pretty small. I should have increased this size, this plots here. You can see that there is a linear scaling here for log F, and here is log L. So you see that there is actually this power law decay here of this fidelity. And then in the main panels for the non-interacting system, you see that this decay is exponential of the fidelity. And this is still valid also in the many-body localized regime where you have interactions, finite interactions, and you keep seeing this exponential behavior, this exponential decay of the fidelity. And the question is, would that be a proper tool to check whether a difference in these two scales may probe whether you're entering in a many-body localized regime or not? Okay, so everything here was done for spinless fermions, and we wonder whether this would be something effective to do in the Hubbard model. Okay, and then as a summary of this presentation, I would like to highlight the phase diagram we have obtained for two different models of disorder. One is completely random disorder given by this flat distribution, which is called the Anderson model, and the other is correlated disorder, the Aubrey-Ander model. The robustness of ergodicity is large, different orders of magnitude among these two types of disorder. We see that the ergodic phase is pretty robust. And then we also saw that close to the many-body localized transition, there are some large equilibration times which might pose some difficulties to experiments. And then further on, we would like to know whether we can probe a scaling for this transition, whether we could have something similar to the paper by this group that analyzed the Heisenberg model with disorder, and whether it would have the same critical exponents. Is this a universal transition that every single problem of many-body physics would have the same universal class, the same critical exponents? Thank you for your attention. The other one is? Right, right.
So in case of integrable models, there is a class of operators whose expectation value doesn't actually look harmless and is given by averages in some generalized groups or something.
Right, right, right.
So is there some class of operators here which would also harmless? I mean, it could clearly depend on
yeah,
the
no, Right, exactly. So this is something that's an important point that he mentioned here, that for integrable models, you have a whole other picture of a thermalization, that you use a different ensemble in order to do that, and then it's the generalized Gibbs ensemble. We're not interested in that. We're interested in the case we have ergodic systems and no other degrees of freedom which are integrable. So we are dealing with non-integrable models in principle. In this case here? For the non-ergodic part? Oh, for sure there is. So that's the point of this talk. I'm not talking much about what is deep inside the many-body localized phase. I know that as in the scene, in a way similar to the non-interacting limit, I don't have ergodicity playing a role there. I'm talking more about the transition itself. Not that I have many integrables of motion deep in the localized regime, but that would be the case. I think there are like many papers in this this path that prove that.
Thank you.